Greetings, friends. In the last few weeks, we've been exploring the theme of inner freedom. And here again, I want to use the description by John O'Donohue as a beautiful expression of the inner sanctuary that we discover as we engage in this journey. He described that there's a place in the soul that neither time, nor space, nor any created thing can touch. He went on to say what that means is that your identity is not equivalent to your biography, and that there's a place in you where you have never been wounded, where there's still a sureness in you, where there's a seamlessness in you, and where there's a confidence and tranquility in you. And I think the intention of prayer and spirituality and love is now and again to visit that kind of inner sanctuary. It's a beautiful description of this unconditioned place in us that's free of the constricted, frightened ego and is therefore free of self-interest. It's more of a natural, generous flow of compassion as we find ourselves in a more spacious landscape that includes one another. Compassionate action is therefore a characteristic of this inner freedom. Since the resonance of love is how we open to and find our way within the expansive heart of God. As we explore the theme of inner freedom in action, I want to be cautious to avoid some of the usual pitfalls that we usually fall into when addressing issues related to social justice and activism. And to acknowledge up front how some of the side eddies that this can draw us into are guilt trips, a sense of heavy duty, attempts to prove how relevant our actions are, or feeling overwhelmed to the point of paralysis. And these can so easily entrench our ego boundaries and keep us from the very freedom that we long for and that the world needs us to live from. And so I'm not going to go into details about all that is wrong in our country and the world or the massive task that is facing us as humanity. I think we are well aware that something extraordinarily different to life as usual is being called for. The problem is that even in the face of a potential crisis of extinction, it is clear that all that we as ego-driven humans are capable of is life as usual, maybe minus one or two plastic drinking straws and a few other sort of confectionery level changes. But this is why the contemplation side is so crucial. Unless we awaken from our small self-interested ego identities, what Jesus called dying to self, we will continue to live with our self at the center of the world and our own personal needs driving the bus of our life. And we have been exploring that quite a bit over the last couple of talks in this series. I recently listened to an excellent commencement speech by David Foster Wallace. You can look it up on YouTube if you're interested. Just look up his name and you'll come across it. And he's pretty blunt where he states that for all of us, without exception, our interpretation of the world is totally wrong and deluded because everything in our own immediate experience supports the deep belief that we are the absolute center of the universe, the most real and important person in existence. He goes on to say that we rarely talk about this natural, basic self-centeredness because it's so socially repulsive, but that it is the default setting of all of us because of the nature of our experience that we are the center of. So unless we make the choice to recognize this and engage in practices that challenge our way of thinking and knowing, we remain trapped in this prison of self-centered delusion. Over the last few months, we have explored some of these practices, such as meditation or centering prayer, surrender, welcoming, and awareness of our thoughts and feelings and how to work with these. And another practice, and this is the one I want to focus on today, is compassion or love, which we practice in how we show up in the world. Again, this is not something that comes naturally to us. Our tendency is to love our friends or family, but not our enemies or those who hold opposing values or views to ourselves. But love, as Jesus described it, should include our enemies and those who persecute us. And so it's not a product of our ego-driven consciousness, almost by definition. As Pema Chodron says, it's daring not to shut anyone out of our hearts, not to make anyone an enemy. It's daring. When we talk about anything to do with action in the world, one of the points that Richard Rohr often makes is that activism is so often driven by ego identities, fueled by righteous fervor and anger, and so quickly others those who are different to ourselves. And although activism has been really important in accomplishing important changes through history, the most lasting change has been wrought by those who are not caught in their small reactive tangles, but have somehow opened to a larger way of being, the more peaceful, wise, and forgiving approach. In a few examples being Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King, Gandhi, and Thich Nhat Hanh. The problem with outrage and righteous zeal fueled by anger is that it entrenches the division between our cause and the wrong other, which just perpetuates the violence that fuels the ego. The result of this is that ego boundaries are hardened even more than they were. There's nothing like defending your own turf to inflame and entrench the ego. And this kind of activism can just be like hard balls hitting against each other, and life as usual continues in this violent tussle. When we encounter injustice, it is important to speak out, absolutely, especially on the side of the voiceless and the marginalized. But we need to be aware of the place that our voice is coming from, the deeper motivation behind our reaction. And lately I've been noticing my sort of ego inflation that happens when I post yet another social media outburst. And I'm also worried that it's just tossing another lot of words into the fire of huge division and collective righteousness that just entrenches the divides and makes the other side dig their heels in even harder, feeling persecuted or misunderstood or whatever. I've become convinced that as long as our action and words stay on the level of ego consciousness, we'll never find a way through our human conundrum and our selfish impact on this planet. This is why I feel compelled to talk about contemplation, because it involves a willing letting go of the small ego identity that the mind constructs, and an opening in surrender to the presence and action of God within. And as this unfolds within us, we become more and more attuned to the quiet, spacious dimension of the divine will. And this gradually frees us from our small agendas, and we can begin to live from a deeper, more wise and tender center. And so this brings us to the action part. And I really like how Richard Rohr always emphasizes the and in contemplation and action, saying that contemplation can just be another excuse to remain self-centered introverts. We need to awaken into God's heart of love for others. This heart of love longs to flow outward, taking us beyond the boundaries of the self, opening us to the full expanse of the nature of God, which includes everybody and every life on this planet. A few years ago, I found it helpful to learn that there are different centers of awakening. There's the awakening at the mind level, where we freed from our internal monologue, our defensive reactive patterns, and all the constriction and suffering that this small ego identity brings. This awakens us to a tremendous freedom and spaciousness of being. But there's also an awakening at the heart level, where we open to the vast, unboundaried spaciousness of God's heart. And there's a reason that when we're young Christians, we use the phrase of inviting Jesus into our heart. And even though this is a metaphor, it does point to a powerful, visceral, bodily location that we identify with God's Spirit living and breathing in us. And so if we shift our locus of control, or the source from which we act and live, from the head to the heart, it's a kind of a bodily shift, and let the heart lead, this allows the Spirit of God to breathe through our hearts, and we can flow more easily with the love of God. And Jesus exemplified somebody who had awakened at both levels. He lived with utter freedom from any self-centered constraints, and without any restriction from the institutional, religious, or economic order of his day. Absolutely radical in that way. And he allowed himself to be a free agent of God's love for those he interacted with, saying, "I only do what I see the Father doing." He didn't have any planned agenda for his daily activities. He just responded completely freely with a compassionate, healing presence, flowing freely from the Spirit breathing in and through his heart. 1 John 4, verse 7 to 8 reads, "Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love." This is actually a deeply radical statement. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Everyone who loves. Even if they don't use our religious language. Where love is expressed, God is expressed. And this is why St. Francis said to his followers, "Preach the gospel and only where necessary use words." The gospel is preached wherever love is expressed, because God is love. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 4 to 10 describes the shape of this love, and what it looks like to be led by the heart. Try and listen to this with fresh ears and a fresh heart. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. So where we express patience, We are sharing the gospel, even if we don't use words. Where we express kindness, we are sharing the gospel. When we express love in any of these ways, there's a kind of billowing of the kingdom of God through us, a free flow of God's kingdom through these acts of love. Our small human capacity is unable to love with this expansive love without some kind of agenda or transaction, some kind of overlay of narrative or thinking about how we're going to get something out of this. But as we awaken to the more spacious dimension of Christ in us, of this true nature place in us that's utterly free of all of that self-centered overlay, the same love that flowed through the heart of Jesus can flow through our hearts. And together with this, as we learn to let go of our own agendas and practice this kind of love, this in turn opens us to more of the heart of Christ in us. And so the intermingling of action and contemplation dance their way into fullness of expression, into a completeness of heart, where the separate parts disappear, as 1 Corinthians 13 verse 10 describes. Let me read that verse again. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part, but when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. But there's a shift in where this love comes from. Rather than being a mental strategy to fix a problem or meet a need, and thereby look good or feel needed or important, rather it's an inner opening, a conscious moving into the quieter, deeper place within us that we've started tasting in our contemplative prayer, and from that place allowing what wants to be expressed to flow through us. Action needs to come from this frictionless place in us so that it doesn't add to the outer friction in the world. This kind of love in action is always birthed in a surrender to the divine will, so that we can echo with Jesus, I only do what I see the Father doing. I only allow the source to flow through me from within. This kind of love in action is not just a calm, serene way of walking through life. There is a passionate fierceness to this love that speaks out strongly when needed, as we see in Jesus driving the money lenders out of the temple. And sometimes this kind of strong response is needed, a clear no in the face of human rights abuses and selfish destructiveness. And there is a kind of artful, wise, and powerful activism that is possible when it comes from this deep, selfless center. And in this way, contemplation and action are inseparable. Once we come to know the movements of our ego identities, all the usual ways we define ourselves and find our identity, and have learned to gently let go, with a bit of humility at our incessant self-absorption, this releases us from the grip of my will, so that we can flow with thy will, which expresses in love, because God is love. This love is so vast that it even forgives our own self-centered foibles and also forgives those of the other. When we interact from this heart, it will refuse to entrench divides. It's fascinating to see Jesus' response during his arrest and trial. At a time when a person would typically be most defensive and keen to point out the hypocrisy and clear error of the other, he remained silent and told Peter to put his sword away, refusing to come to his own self-defense. No wonder one of the Roman soldiers at his crucifixion uttered, "Surely this was the Son of God." So to draw this together, inner freedom in action is not about trying to fix the mess the world is in. This is beyond any individual's capacity to fix or problem solve. And setting out to do so is the heroic journey of a ego wanting to be right, to be self-satisfied at fixing, at correcting. Rather, inner freedom in action involves our daily choices to participate in the love of God from this quiet, centered, and free place within us that is more spacious than the small self and her or his reactive patterns. And this is why practices that awaken our inner freedom are so important, to gradually unravel the knot of the self. And we can also choose to open to the great heart of love, responding from this perspective in our daily interactions, from this quiet, spacious place, and allow what longs to be expressed through us to flow in action in love. Thomas Merton described contemplative transformation in this way, that the separate entity that is you apparently disappears, and nothing seems to be left but a pure freedom, indistinguishable from infinite freedom. Love identified with love, not two loves, one waiting for the other, striving for the other, seeking for the other, but love loving in freedom. Love loving in freedom. So may we allow our small riverbanks of self to be flooded with the love and freedom of God, our beloved, participating in the river of God's love so that collectively, not so that any one human is a hero of this, but that the Spirit of God flowing through us in love may form a powerful confluence, a flowing source of life and healing in our world. And may we be open for the love of God to be expressed through us in all the daily, ordinary, yet transformative ways that matter, because God is love. Amen.